Welcome to all here on Campus FM 103.7. This is Shades of Green, the only program that gives you all the perspectives of our surrounding environment. Well, Shades of Green broadcast for you every Tuesday at 14:30 with a repeat on Fridays at 20:00. Well, so far we have tackled issues ranging from sustainability to waste management to social economy. And today, it's something new. We're going to talk about the work being done here in terms of Malta's marine life. And a good day to you. I hope you're all feeling fine. This is Vanessa and we have decided today to discuss marine life. As always, accompanying me, there is Dr. Paul Patch here in the studio, and for today, we shall have with us over the phone Professor Victor Asha from the Department of Biology at the Faculty of Science here at the University of Malta. Of course, whoever you are, wherever you are, your presence is always a vital key for this programme. Dr. Patch, good day to you. How are
Hello.
You feeling?
Fine, thanks.
That is good. I would also like to welcome Professor Asha, who is following us over the phone. Hello, Professor Asha. How
Hello.
Are you?
Hello to you.
Thank you. I thank you for joining us here and telling us more about your work here on Shades of Green. Professor Asha's principal research interest lies in marine ecotoxicology, and he supervised a number of international research projects related to marine pollution and environmental quality. One recent major project that he supervised was that in which water quality around Malta was being monitored by use of Landsat satellite. He has acted in a consultative capacity to various national and international bodies. Well, Professor Asha, with a nice bibliography. So, how can you tell us a bit more about your work and research here in Malta?
As you just said in your introduction, my work mostly involves assessing water quality, or rather environmental quality, along our shores. We can do this sort of assessment by using a number of different tools. We can use the Landsat satellite, or other satellites to that matter. There's a wide range of them, and we have used satellites like Landsat, which is an American satellite, and ERS satellite, which is radar-based, using a different approach. Two much less sophisticated tools, for example, using the presence of an enzyme or the presence of a chemical in an organism to see whether it is stressed.
Mm-hmm.
Two even more, even less sophisticated tools, which, for example, I don't know whether we will be having enough time to talk about this, assessing imposex in snails. This basically means when a female snail starts to grow a penis, and we can actually measure this penis using a plastic ruler. So in that case, and this happens to be an extremely sensitive analytical tool, by measuring the effect of imposex on this snail, you would actually be measuring the quality of water from the point of view of release of antifouling paints. So in other words, we can use a tool as simple as a plastic ruler and as complex as a satellite.
Okay. So how would such a satellite, for example, be used to analyze the water quality?
Well, first of all, satellites as a tool are quite expensive.
Yes.
But they have one major advantage. They give you a synoptic picture, an overview picture.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when we want to take measurements of water quality, we have to go by a boat to a particular place, and our data has very limited geographical coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But with a satellite, you can have the whole of Malta and assess the water quality around the whole of Malta in one shot. So that's an extremely important advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do we do it? First of all, we can only measure not any parameter, but a very limited number of parameters, namely water temperature, whether the water is turbid or not, the release of total suspended solids in water, as well as chlorophyll, which is the green pigment, the presence of which indicates certain problems. I mean, when the water is greenish, then of course there is an indication that the water is dirty. So we can measure only those three parameters, and we can do so using certain sensors which are present on the satellite. Well, the whole procedure is quite technical, but eventually we end up producing maps which show the distribution of these parameters. For example, whether the water is turbid in a particular bay, or whether the temperature is high or low next to a power station. So we can get these sort of maps, which tell us quite a lot of things about the quality of our waters.
Professor Asha, for many individuals, even in services we conducted at university to different students, the first thing that comes to mind when they when we mention marine pollution is oil spills and oil pollution. Mm-hmm. But you've already indicated that there are other sources of pollution. Can you identify maybe a list of the major pollutants or sources of pollution over here?
First of all, you refer to oil pollution. Mm-hmm. Now, I agree that as such, I mean, this pollutant is quite an emotive one, in the sense that the oil is black, it's sticky, it's
visible.
It smells, you know, it's visible, it sticks to your pants when you sit on the beach, and there are these tar balls on the beach. So it elicits a response from us, you know. And in any case, it does have a certain negative impact on the fauna and flora of our coast. Mm-hmm. And also, we sitting pretty in the center of the Mediterranean Sea are the recipients of loads of oil slick.
Yes, in fact, I wanted to ask you about this matter. How much is Malta affected by oil spills?
Quite a lot.
Yes?
At this stage, we're talking about two types of oil spills, so to speak. First of all, the major oil spills, which thanks God have never really hit the island. When an oil spill is a major oil spill, we're talking about an oil spill which would be, say, 5-10 times the size of Malta. And at that case, only the Lord can deliver us from the from the impact of such an oil spill, which sometimes do happen in certain parts of the world. For example, the oil spill that occurred off the coast of France, for example, and of the coast at Galicia, off the coast of Spain, a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, these types of oil spills, as you well know, never hit the island.
We've been spared till now.
Yes, we have been spared till now, and I believe it has to do also with our religious...
we're really protected.
We are, really protected to a certain extent, or there is something which we can't really explain, because, for example, these oil spills, especially the medium type of oil spills, are known to occur around Malta, and somehow they never did come in on our shores. For example, using a satellite, a radar satellite, which I referred to a few minutes ago, in 1999, on a particular day, I remember it was on the 15th August, because I remember it was Santa Maria,
yes.
You know, and this is a public holiday, and I was there sweating my way out on a boat trying to so I do remember the date. And along with my students, of course.
Mm-hmm. So we're keeping away the oil slick?
But students are not meant to grumble, you know. I mean,
of course.
So the thing is that on that particular day, by means of a satellite, we actually saw no less than 3 moderate oil spills, which could have easily entered Malta. And it was only a question of direction of sea currents, which prevented them from entering our shores. Now, if one of those oil spills, for example, hit, say, Comino or Melilla, it would have spelled an economic disaster on the island. So that
and
is what I mean by...
And what was the diameter of a moderate oil spill?
Well, it could be, say, not diameter, because oil spills usually are longish.
Okay.
Oil spills usually result from when a ship which is moving along a straight line starts discharging
so it
leaves
oil, a trail.
Which incidentally shows that the spill is intentional in the sense that it is not accidental. It did not happen because something went wrong with the ship, but because the ship is illegally discharging bilge oil. So, in any case, the slick usually is a longish slick, and that can be anything up to 18-20 kilometers.
Wow.
That's a normal oil slick. I mean,
a
moderate one. And so this is what I mean. In other words, yes, we do have a potential risk of these oil slicks, which originate especially from oil tankers passing by, especially between Malta and Sicily. Mm-hmm. But as Paul said initially, there are other things which are also important. Incidentally, also about oil, local boat users those having a small watercraft and going about around our island simply for pleasure also contributes to oil pollution around Malta. As a matter of fact, their contribution might be more significant in the sense that it is chronic, so they are spilling small amounts of...
But continuously.
And continuously. So in the long run, their impact on our fauna and flora, on our sea life, might be more important.
Yes.
As regards other problems, well, one problem evidently is sewage. Especially, of course, we are made aware of the sewage problem only in the summer because we go swimming in summer. But, of course, sewage does not only have an impact on the water quality vis-a-vis bacteriological, that is, microbes, but also release of nutrients and release of other toxicants, including, for example, heavy metals. Now, as you well know, we have two types of such sewage being discharged into water. That is, which is intentional. We have about three points along our island where untreated sewage is intentionally discharged into the sea, because we are, up to now we don't treat it. Hopefully, we would be able to treat all the sewage.
So it is a conscious decision taken that.
I mean, what can you do?
Yes.
I mean, you can't keep.
Yes, of course.
From flushing it.
So overflowing of sewage.
We can consider exporting.
Yes.
So of course, there are. For example, about 80% of Malta's untreated sewage is discharged from the outfall at Vita Mir, which is near Shira.
Yeah.
And this is the amount of oil, the amount of sewage which is discharged is quite substantial. I've made a rough calculation which indicates that the volume of sewage which is discharged in a year would be roughly around the even more than the volume of the Matap.
Really?
You know, as a bulk.
So, because we see Matap, I mean, we see that its volume is quite large, but the fact that we don't really see what's happening...
Exactly.
We might even...
But then there are other insidious sources of pollution, of sewage pollution, like coastal pumping stations which fail due to some, you know, some mishap. And it is these releases which usually... have more impact on our baiting beaches because no one in his right senses would bait next to a sewage outfall. But people going, say, in Meliha or swimming in Meliha or St. Paul's Bay, there are some notorious sites which can be, which can be polluted because of this release of sewage from pumping stations. Of course, we don't want to sound too.
Alarmist.
Our seas are, on the whole, clean, and they should be kept that way. And this is why we are working to keep them that way.
So, can I ask you what prompted you? I mean, maybe you've already indirectly given us an answer to this, but what prompted you to start your work in this field, in this sector?
You want to have the real answer, I presume.
Let's try for the real one first.
Well, you know how it happens. You're in a student. You are a BSc student, and at a certain part of the course, you are asked to take up a project, choose a supervisor, and it must have been related my choice to the supervisor. Rather, I would choose rather A than B. You know, and then of course there is. That inclination towards a particular subject, which then builds up afterwards rather than before, you know. That is, to be frank. I can't say that I had some particular inclination to choose this subject rather than any other subject for any particular reason.
But then you start unraveling, exploring.
I remember that in my time, I don't need to say when.
No.
We know.
You know. But in my time, I remember that there was this Dr. Luis Vella, Luis Saliba, who was performing a very, very interesting experiment, what looked to me as extremely interesting. He was trying to control oil slicks, to remove oil slicks using treat dust rather than oil dispersants. Mm. Now, you might know that oil slicks, one way to remove oil slicks from the surface is to treat them with oil dispersants. These mm-hmm. oil dispersants, however, can be more toxic than the oil itself.
Mm-hmm. Oil dispersants absorb the oil?
No, the oil dispersant disperses the oil. Okay. They act like detergents.
Okay.
And so they remove the oil and break it down into oil droplets, minute oil droplets, and really remove it from the surface. Hmm. Now, that itself, of course, will displace the problem from the surface to the whole water column.
Of course.
But under certain circumstances, that it would be good enough for us, mm-hmm. because at least you will not allow the oil to enter a beach, which could be of economic importance, yes. for example. But it would have been more proper if we use some other physical agent than chemical agent, which is a dispersant, which can be toxic. Mm-hmm. So this Dr. Saliba was using street dust, mm-hmm. you know, actually the dust we collect from yes. street sweeping. This is made up of weathered limestone powder, uh-huh. and this is highly,
absorbent,
as technical
yeah.
here, oleo. Mm-hmm. Philic, it absorbs oil. Mm. So when it comes in contact with the oil, it absorbs the oil, mm-hmm. and the dust particles sink, carrying the oil with them.
Yes.
Of course, we wanted to know whether it is practical to use and whether it can exert any impact on bottom life, like sea urchins, etc. So that is how I started.
Mm. Mm.
Thank you for that. You reminded me when I had to go through the individual investigation on oil dispersant. I remember the name. It was Deizik Sligon, if I remember correctly.
I thought you would be saying something like this.
But it was quite interesting, because one of the things that really impressed me, and when you started mentioning the measurements that you mentioned at the very start, you reminded me of it, is that certain people think that the direct impact on life as regards marine pollution is, it's a sort of knockdown effect, you know, you're polluted, you die. Mm. But as I discovered when doing the investigation that you had outlined, sometimes the sublethal effects leave much more damage than we actually are aware of.
In other words, a pollutant can kill, but it can also render the individual less successful to continue mm-hmm. living.
Yes.
Well, I just already mentioned an example of Imposex.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I'd like to ask another question, though, along a bit of a different line. You mentioned about even sewage disposal, or maybe disposal from industries and other organizations, but what can they do to prevent such pollution to marine flora and fauna?
So you're referring to industry now.
Mm, yes. Let's speak about the industry part.
Sure, sure. Look, first of all, as you know, our public sewers collect both industrial wastewaters as well mm-hmm. as domestic.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about untreated sewage being discharged into the marine environment, this means that lots of toxic waste from industry is reaching our marine environment.
Yes.
Because they pass through the same pipe, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, however, there are regulations which try to control the activities of discharge of this industrial wastewater into the sewers. And these regulations stipulate the kind of materials that they can discharge into sewers. Mm-hmm. For example, they can't discharge more than a certain amount of grease, because otherwise there will be problems with clogging of pipes. They can't discharge any mercury. Mm-hmm. Or, of course, when I talk about mercury, I don't mean that silver substance which we see, but I'm talking about very minute levels of compounds of mercury, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. aren't even visible to the
mm-hmm.
naked eye,
mm-hmm.
and heavy metals. Now, unfortunately, much of our industry is not as yet geared up to have the appropriate treatment plants. In other words, while they do treat their wastewaters prior to being discharged into the sewers to remove grease and oils, they can't really do it to remove things like heavy metals. Now, and there's going to be an implication in the long run of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, and one of my students actually proved this already, that if we are, our plans right now for liquid waste management is to treat all our sewage. so as to prevent any impact on the marine environment, as well as to use the resultant water, which we can reclaim, so to speak, from sewage, which makes sense. But to do this, we need a number of sewage treatment plants. Now, these sewage treatment plants work on the basis of bacteria, microbes. These bacteria, microbes, in this case, they are not pathogenic and they are helpful. In other words, they are beneficial to us. These bacteria are, in effect, eating up the toxins, eating up the wastes, okay? Mm-hmm. Especially eating up the organic waste, so to speak.
The waste.
Now, these bacteria, if they, if in some way they are killed by toxins, then of course the sewage treatment plant will stop functioning.
I understand.
This means that if industrial wastes, wastewaters, as they move from the factory through the sewers and they reach the treatment plant, if they could, in theory, and we proved also in practice, they could reduce the efficiency of the treatment plant simply because they will be affecting these bacteria. Of course, this would mean that we would have spent millions and millions of pounds on our sewage treatment plants for nothing.
For nothing. Mm-hmm. Well, now I just have one last question, which I would like to ask both you and Dr. Patch. And this is this. If you were to give any suggestion, say, for example, okay, let's think of people of the general public, of educators, of teachers, well, who are out there, what suggestions would you give to them, to anybody who takes up the role of educating people on how to deal and to contribute to the conservation of marine species? Well, what sort of suggestion would you give them?
To your educators, you mean?
Yes.
Well, first of all, most of these problems arise from misuse of our resources and from lack of foresight, lack of understanding of what we're doing. I don't really believe that anyone enjoys killing fish or killing, marine life or whatever. So it's a lack of sensitivity to what are the impacts of our own actions. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, this is where the educator plays a key role, because he or she will be an instrument through which we can change the way of life and our culture and our way of doing things, especially, the way of doing things vis-a-vis release of pollutants, etc., and abuse and misuse of marine resources.
Yeah, and in fact, what you're saying about culture reminds me of the fact that for quite a long time, most of the materials used in schools were actually reflecting a foreign type of environment. Like, for example, most of the fieldwork carried out in schools was focused on the woodland environment, with nothing related to the marine environment, which we are practically surrounded with. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, there is a movement, particularly with the setting up of the SEC examinations, where there has been a rehaul of syllabi in schools, giving much more focus on marine issues. Personally, I feel that there's still a lot to be done, but at least they have started. And also, some schools have already started doing on a regular basis marine fieldwork, in the sense that students are becoming aware of what's available out there, and basically that there is this dynamic interaction between several conditions, several situations.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I fully agree. So educators have to play a key role. But of course, we can't stop there. I mean, we must realize that we have to share the responsibility towards protecting our environment. We can't keep on pointing fingers towards other people or the authorities. Even the authorities themselves, if we accuse them of not doing something properly, it's because of our fault, because we voted for them.
Yes.
We have to be much more aware about the type of impact that we can have on our environment. And that there are things which we can do. Things which are, for example,
yes.
If we were talking about marine pollution, a simple thing. There are people who because of some reason which I can't really understand, they go fishing next to a sewage outfall. Now, this is, to my mind, this is illegal and this is criminal. Mm-hmm. Because if you catch fish from the vicinity of sewage outfalls, they are bound to be contaminated.
Of course.
Now, what do they do with these fish? Do they eat them or do they sell these fish?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so this means that this is something very, very practical. Mm-hmm. If people are aware of the kind of health problems that they can create by selling or offering contaminated fish, then, of course, they would have started doing something very, very practical indeed.
Mm-hmm.
It is obvious, for
something
example.
Something small, it does not really cost money, it just takes common sense.
It's common sense and being responsible towards your fellow
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That is very true.
Also, it is not advisable, for example, to eat shellfish from the sea.
Raw.
Mm-hmm. Like sea urchins, for mm-hmm. example. So this is something very, very practical indeed.
Yes.
The more you are aware of these problems, the more you are aware of what you can do,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. The more you are not aware, the more you wouldn't care less.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Professor Asher. Well, dear friends, just a small summary roundup of what we have said. We have, well, spoken about some aspects, very brief aspects on marine life and marine environment. Well, and as usual, as a last bit, I would like to point out some websites which might be of interest to all of you about education in the marine life. Well, from the US, we have a site which looks quite interesting, and it's http://exchanges.state.gov/forum/journal/env5internet.htm, all in lowercase. And from Australia, we've got the www.deh.gov.au/education/facts/marine.html. Some good sites for you to check out. And that is all for today from us here at Shades of Green. On my and your behalf, I thank our guests for their valid contributions and their information. Thank you, Dr. Potch. Thank you, Professor Asha. In the meantime, I remind you, same time, same frequency. So bye-bye and take good care.